Live from Lane County, Oregon, it's the Bo's Nose Show with your host, West Lane County Commissioner Jay Bolsevich. And now, here's Jay.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of the Bo's Nose Show. And it was another beautiful day here in downtown Elmira, Oregon. And tonight we're going to be talking about smart meters. So if you want to get in on the action, you just have to call 646-721-9887. Then just press 1 if you want to join in the conversation. Or you can just send me an email at talk@krbnradio.net. So tonight, my guest is Lance Robertson, and he's with the Eugene Water and Electric Board, which is the local water and electric utility for Eugene, Oregon, home of the Ducks. And Lance, what exactly is your title with the EWEB, as people like to call it?
Yeah, I'm the public affairs manager. So I'm responsible for all external and internal communications and government affairs and all kinds of things.
Great. So you've got an interesting history resume-wise. Didn't you used to also be with the Register Guard?
I did indeed. I worked 17 years for the Register Guard. I was mostly the environmental reporter, covered a lot of environmental issues, mainly the whole spotted owl, timber, old growth forest issue, and have about 25 years of newspaper experience, and left that, like I said, after a quarter century. I always figured that every quarter century you ought to do something different, so moved over to you.
Yeah, I waited 29 years before I changed from engineering to politics, so So it's interesting you have that journalistic background, because that's kind of that not really accepting everything at face value and confirming, doing research and confirming what people say is kind of just by nature something that's in your background. So as we get to talking about smart meters, I thought that was kind of important that people might want to know that about you, that you're just not somebody that's been in the water and electric utility industry forever. You actually came from the media side, journalism side. So smart meters is an interesting thing. It's funny, I put that I was going to be doing the show on smart meters out onto Facebook yesterday, and I got more reaction from that post than I've gotten from any post I've had for any of my shows. You know, whether I was going to have the sheriff on and talk about marijuana laws to you name it, I got more reaction out of smart meters than anything. It seems like they're a pretty controversial subject. And I heard everything from they cause cancer to it's all a big conspiracy of the United Nations as part of Agenda 21. So why don't we just start off with the real basics? What is a smart meter versus a standard meter?
Well, thanks, Jay. It's just at its basic level, a smart meter or an advanced meter essentially uses radio frequencies to connect to a point to transmit information about consumption, or it could transmit the other way to perhaps connect to the customer at the other end. And so a regular meter essentially requires a human being to come around once a month and read the meter. And with an advanced meter, you can essentially read that meter remotely.
So how are they just as accurate? I mean, also, kind of, one of the things about having a human read a meter, they can make a mistake reading the meter. Is this smart meter as accurate as the standard ones with the spinning dials that we all remember from childhood?
They're actually more accurate. The meter is essentially transmits the data. It's accurate, even down to a fraction of a kilowatt hour. You know, you're right that you know, meters that have to be read manually do, you know, you have that capability of transposing the numbers or something, but also particularly the older meters that are what you might call the old analog type meters, actually over time they kind of slow down. So meters that have been out in the field for 20 or 30 or 40 years, that little spinning dial tends to slow down over time a little bit.
So you actually might be getting more power than you're paying for.
Yeah, great for the consumer. I mean, you're actually getting more power than you're probably paying for.
Yeah, but at the same time, it artificially tends to inflate the per kilowatt hour price of electricity if the billing's under billing everybody across an entire utility. It means they actually have to keep their prices up to pay for the base cost. So
the per unit cost would be a little bit higher, but in general, you're recovering the same amount of revenue. That's not really an issue.
But the thing, what it might do is it might favor somebody that's a high user, you know, that uses a lot of electricity, like the guy that maybe is growing something in his attic, versus the little old lady who's trying to be very frugal if the per kilowatt hour price is inflated.
Well, yeah, but in Oregon, you don't even have to go up to your attic anymore to grow that stuff. You can just grow it in your living room if you want.
Yeah, maybe when we get past the smart meters here, we can have a little discussion about what that's doing to the electric grid in residential neighborhoods, that high demand use of residential property to grow things.
Sure, yeah, no problem, yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned that these meters report in every day. Is there a reason for doing that versus just once a month?
Well, they can be set really whatever time interval you want, up to a point. I think probably about a month is the longest time interval. So, you know, one of the great things about our program that we're hoping to roll out is, you know, we're giving customers a lot of choices around that, to a point where the customer actually has to opt in to whether they're going to receive the services that come with that meter. I mean, really, ultimately, it's not about the meter; it's about the services that we can offer customers and that would benefit customers that require an automated meter.
So you mentioned services that would come with a smart meter or advanced meter. What sort of services would those be? You know, what additional customer service comes with a smart meter that you don't get with a standard meter or dumb meter?
Well, there's a lot of different, there's kind of a whole suite of services that we're planning to roll out over the next 3 to 4 years. And, you know, to kind of back up a little bit, you know, electric utilities largely are dealing with technology that, you know, is pretty old. In some cases, you know, 40, 50, 60 years old. I mean, the manual read of meters is a case in point. So, we're hoping to offer customers such things as, you know, automated, of course, the automated read of your meter is one, but you would also be able to start or stop service with a click of a button. I mean, most people don't realize that, you know, to start service at an electric utility like ours, you have to call us up. You have to arrange a time when someone can come out to the home. They come out, they reset the meter. and then they go away. And, you know, we usually have a charge for that to recover the cost of doing that. And mm-hmm. with automated meters, you basically can start service online, or you could call us up and say, I want to start service, and I want to start it at, you know, 6 p.m. tonight, and boom, you know, your service starts at 6 p.m. tonight. I mean, that at its basic level, that's one of the prime services. Another one would be more instantaneous electric outage notification. Most people don't know that when you have a power outage, we don't know that you have a power outage because our system can't see those outages. You actually have to call us up and report the outage before we can get started on figuring out why you have an outage and then getting a truck out there and repairing that outage. With automated meters, the outage is recorded automatically because the meter essentially goes off. And then we know, for example, that a house in the 2300 block of Madison Street, for example, might have an outage. And so we can pinpoint those outages. We can get repairs started earlier, and we can also communicate back with the customer. We can set it up so that a customer would automatically get a text message or an email that would say, we've noticed that your power is out at your residence. You know, we're on it. We'll try to figure it out and get it repaired as fast as we can. And then we can follow up with a estimated time of when that outage will be repaired. We can't do any of that right now.
Yeah. So
also another option, because we are a water utility, would be leak detection. You know, one of the huge things we have is, you know, sometimes people have a water leak at their, you know, within their sprinkler system or underground in their where the water comes in from the meter. And a lot of times that'll go undetected for perhaps the rest of the month until you get your monthly bill. And all of a sudden the customer has, you know, a bill where they might have used four or five or six times the amount of water that they normally use, and they're getting charged for that. And so, you know, water leak detection can be set so that, you know, the customer, if they all of a sudden they get a certain percentage over their normal water usage, we can send them a text message or an email saying, hey, we've detected that your water usage is, you know, X percent above normal. You might have a water leak. You should get it checked out. But again, all of these services are voluntary. They're not mandatory, and it's all about customer choice.
Yeah. So with the power outage one, if the meters are only reporting once a day, how would you know, you know, would you wait till the once a day time you guys would realize the power was out at that house? Or is there something in the meter that automatically sends a signal from a battery operated? You know, is there a battery in these things or something that, mm-hmm. that can send a signal when they detect the power is no longer flowing?
Yes, there is a battery in them, and they would do that. So they can be set to send the consumption data once a day or once a month. But if there's an interruption in that power, it would automatically trigger a transmission back to EWET to let us know that there's been some kind of interruption in the power.
Wow, having been around when you guys in a windstorm there and all that, that would help pinpoint almost to the pole where the lines were down, at least the first set of lines or something, because you could tell from how many houses along that particular branch of feeder is, you know, are out to figure out where to send the truck first.
Right now we are literally in the dark, no pun intended, when we have particularly large outages like that, where we have to send a truck and it rolls down the street with a flashlight on, looking up at the power lines, trying to figure out where the outage is. That's the low-tech technology that we have today.
Yeah. And I've been been around for when that's happened, and it's the guys are out there driving, you know, driving through neighborhoods trying to look up at the lines and worrying about whether they're running over a tree branch at the same time. Usually takes a couple guys and a pretty powerful light and all that, and it's a pretty poor use of manpower in a time when they should be actually repairing the line to actually find out where they need to repair the line. And this system get them
So some other, you know, some other services, for example, might be, you know, you could set your own billing date. You know, if you get paid once a month on the 30th, you can set your billing date for a day after that or 2 days after that, whenever you want. You know, you can, you know, eventually you'll probably be able to do what's called prepay. You could actually pay in advance for power, and then you would get a message similar to what you do now with your, perhaps if you're on Verizon or some kind of smartphone, when you've used 75% of your data, you know, you get a little text message saying, hey, you've used 75% of your data. You know, what do you want to do? And it gives the customer more options. You can put more money on it, or you can curtail your power usage, or you could take other steps to manage your bill like that. And eventually, you know, we'll probably offer other kinds of pricing options, such as time of use pricing and some other more sophisticated pricing options that might be appealing to customers.
Yeah, that being able to get a flag when you're running your bills, getting close to your budget, that'd be really useful for folks that are on fixed incomes to be able to get that. You're now at 75% of the budget you gave. You know, they could tell eWeb, you know, what their budget is, and they got that 75% message on the 29th day of the billing period. It's not such a big deal, but if they get it on the 15th day of the billing period, they need to either prepare by not going to the movies this coming weekend or whatever.
Yeah, and other utilities that have had that two-way communication like that have found that it's been a really popular option for customers to have that two-way communication, and that calls to their call centers go way down. You know, you maybe don't have to have as many people in your call center because you're not getting calls about high bills, because the customer kind of knows what's coming. So, you know, there's just the ability to communicate that way with the customer is something that's perhaps a hidden benefit that a lot of people don't realize, but it's experience of other utilities has been that's really beneficial, and the customers like it.
Yeah, I can see that they would like it. And I remember quite often going to high water bill situations, and where a customer, you know, had a leak in their underground irrigation system that they didn't know about, and it happened just after the meter was read, and they wouldn't get their bill from the next meter cycle through the mail till about a week or so afterwards, and it'd be this huge bill. In the meantime, their meter's still spinning with this underground leak they didn't realize they had. It's really, and it's sad, because I've seen several hundred dollar bills that way.
Yeah, so it's been we've had some customers that have had, you know, 100,000 or 200,000 gallon water usage where it's, you know, several hundred dollars, and it would be great to be able to not have that customer get a bill like that, and to be able to alert that customer that there might be a water leak well in advance of when they get their bill.
Yeah, it really would. So are customers like able to go online and look at their own usage or something? Is that something that would be available to them, and, you know, they could check themselves without waiting for that text about being 75% used?
You betcha. So we're still a little undecided about whether we're going to have a web portal or whether we're going to offer an in-home device. We may offer both, but more than likely it'll be some kind of web portal where you can go online. you know, there's probably a certain percentage of our customers who really want to geek out on that and really really like that. You know, other customers might just sort of see it as a novelty for a little while until they get used to maybe seeing how their power consumption patterns are, and then they kind of, you know, move away from it a bit. But that option's always there. And, you know, it's useful, too, to kind of help see help the customer see what they're using and when they're using power. And some of the we had a pilot project a couple of years ago, and a lot of the feedback we got from customers then was, wow, you know, I was kind of wondering why I was looking at my daily power consumption, and I saw that it spiked up, and then I remembered, oh, that was when I, you know, turned something on for quite a while, and that was the effect of that. So it does have an effect of sort of energy management for within the home or within a business. But again, you know, we think there's other services that are maybe more appealing to a broader range of customers, but definitely the web portal where you can see your daily consumption is going to be popular with a probably a smaller segment of our customers.
Yeah, well, I'm probably one of those geeks that would like to go in and look.
Well, sure you are. Yeah, and that's great. That, again, it's all about options. We want to offer enough services and a variety of services that, you know, it's got something that appeals to all kinds of folks, and you don't have to take advantage of all the services. You can pick and choose.
Yeah. So I want to jump back to where you mentioned that you guys could turn somebody's power on without having to send somebody out and then charging them for that visit. Is it something where you could turn somebody's power off without a lot of notice or warning to them?
Well, that's not what we do now. We would never turn somebody's power off without giving them notice. So we don't do that now. We wouldn't do that in the future. The only time we might do that would be if there's some dire emergency where perhaps there's a safety reason to do that out in the street, or, you know, something of that nature where it's kind of a snap decision where we have to, maybe for the public safety, we have to cut power. But, you know, we wouldn't do it under normal circumstances by any means.
Yeah. So, yeah, I could see we really wouldn't want to do that. You know, because you never know if you're cutting somebody's power off and they're in the middle of something very critical, like, you know, downloading a critical file for a business or something that gets corrupted.
Yeah, or the whole season of Game of Thrones or something.
Yeah. But
I mean, so, you know, one of the things, you know, we know that there's a lot of people out there with home businesses, for example, and, you know, 30 years ago, that wasn't as prevalent, but, you know, now it's much more important to make sure that customers get notification even at the residential level, because, you know, a lot of people work at home, and they're, you know, being able to do their business at home is important to them.
Yep, I'm sitting in my wife's office at home right now in downtown Elmira.
Well, there you go.
Yep. But and also, isn't there law or at least PUC regulations or something about when you are actually going to shut somebody's power off for non-payment that you guys have to go through a certain number of steps before you can actually do that?
Well, as a public utility with our own elected commissioners who are elected and charged with governing the utility, you know, we by and large develop our own policies regarding shutoff. You know, the PSC does have some regulations. I'm almost convinced that our shutoff notice policy is much more liberal than what's allowed under the under the PUC. We give quite a bit of time for the customer to respond if they haven't, for example, paid their bill. And the customer essentially can go almost 3 months without paying their bill before they're shut off. But you know, when it comes time to shut off, yeah, we do a door hanger. We usually give customers 48 hours to respond, and if that doesn't happen, then we do have people who we have to shut their power off for a variety of reasons. So it's not very common, but it happens.
Yep. So what if somebody has solar panels on their house or a wind turbine or something like that? Do these meters work to in reverse where they sell power back into the grid, or are these just one-way meters, or?
They would, just like we have that situation now, essentially. We have people who we are buying power from them. They have a meter that's a digital meter that allows us to do that, not only sell the customer power, but to buy back that power, or at least credit back to the customer when the meter is essentially running in reverse. And so we have that already with meters that are read manually.
Yeah. So I want to move on to a couple of the concerns I was seeing. Now we've kind of talked about what smart meters do and can't do. I've heard a lot of different concerns. Let's start with the one I probably hear the most often, that these things are going to give us cancer or cause health problems, because the EMF, which for the folks out there, that's electromagnetic fields that they set up, and or the radio waves that they put out are going to somehow or another be bad for our health. What kind of EMF and radio waves do they put out? Is it like a cell phone, or is it different frequencies that people are concerned about this? Or, what's the difference between the cell phone I keep in my hip pocket or on my purse versus this meter that's mounted on the outside of my house?
Well, a couple things going on there. So one is the cell phone that you have that you keep on your hip probably transmits up to 6 times a minute. Connects usually to a tower somewhere, and it's also transmitting back. So cell phones transmit almost all the time. And also the proximity that you are to the actual device is quite a bit. As far as a cell phone, you're much closer to a cell phone than you are generally to a meter that's strapped to your house. So that's everything has a limit. So, for example, 5 minutes in the sun is probably not going to be harmful, which the sun is essentially radio waves and radiation. But if you're in the sun for 2 hours without any sunscreen, it's going to be not good for you. And so, it's a matter of the duration of the transmission, but also the proximity that you are to the transmission. And, the signal strength as well. So, in general, the advanced meters have transmit far fewer times, or the frequency of transmission is much, much less, sometimes on the order of hundreds of times to thousands of times less than perhaps a cell phone. When people talk about these things emit radiation. It's radiation is a spectrum on the essentially on the radio wave spectrum, and so it sounds scary, but like I said, the sun is essentially a form of that as well. So I mean, there's a lot of information out there about the comparing the advanced meters to other kinds of devices that use radio frequencies as well.
Yeah, I saw a web page from the American Cancer Society that basically said that there really was no risk from smart meters, that actually most of your home appliances were emitting far more EMF and radio frequency than a smart meter does, and you tend to not stand as close to a smart meter on a regular basis as you do to your microwave, TV, Wi-Fi router, and other various things that emit radio frequency, like your cell phone.
Right, and so, we want to recognize that, there are people with concerns, and there are people with certain beliefs about all kinds of things, and we believe we've been very responsive to that, and we've developed a program for our advanced meters that is responsible and also gives the customer essentially ultimate choice. Our board has adopted essentially an opt-in strategy in which the customer has to proactively tell us they want the services that would be enabled through a smart meter. To our knowledge, we're the only utility, I think, in the country that has adopted that. Every other utility has adopted what's called opt-out. In other words, the utility installs advanced meters on every home and business, and then it's up to the customer to tell the utility that they want to opt out. And so we've taken the customer choice to a whole different level. And hopefully we're going to set the standard across the rest of the country.
Yeah, which is an interesting standard, because I think one of the things that the more recent controversy about is Pacific Power, I think, just announced that they're going to be installing smart meters, and I think they're doing it essentially, like you said, they're just going to install them and have people are going to have to ask to opt out.
True. Yeah. So so if a customer is concerned, they don't have to have a meter activated. The trade-off is they're not going to be able to take advantage of the services that we're going to be offering with this.
Yeah. So, I didn't get into this too much at first, but besides the fact that the smart meters offer a lot of customer service benefits, they also offer a cost savings to the utility. And that it makes it easier for you guys to deal with those customer service things. You mentioned less people in the call center, not having to have the meter read by a person on site, or having to send somebody to do power turn-ons or turn-offs. Is that a significant savings to a utility, and is that something that will be keep future power costs down? Why does EWEB, what's the business reason for them to want to have these smart or advanced meters?
Well, yeah, that's a great question, Jay. And for us, it's a little different since we went to opt-in. So other utilities that essentially just like Pacific Core or Portland General Electric installed, 800,000 meters, a number of years ago. For those utilities that just do that installation all in a course of, several months and they're all in, there are immediate cost savings, with not having to roll trucks everywhere. You also get kind of a carbon footprint savings as well. You're not driving vehicles nearly as much. You're saving, I think we estimated that if we had installed the meters all at once and achieved the immediate savings, we'd save about you know, somewhere between 15 and 20,000 gallons of gasoline a year. And we had estimated, I think, initially that we would probably save around $2 million a year. But with the opt-in approach, it's more of a what we call a slow roll. So we're going to have to ask customers to buy into these services over a longer period of time. And we know that it's probably going to take perhaps 3 to 5 years to get the vast majority of our customers to sign up for these services. You know, so the cost savings for us are going to be more gradual than they would be if we were just putting the meters in all at once.
Interesting.
I mean, so the cost savings, so again, it becomes more of a, in a way, it becomes more of a customer service and enhancing the services to customers more than it is a cost savings. We will eventually achieve those cost savings. It's just going to take a lot longer to do that.
Yeah. We're talking with Lance Robertson from the Eugene Water Electric Board about smart meters tonight. And if you want to get in on the conversation, just dial in at 646-721-9887 and just press 1 if you want to get in on the conversation. So, Lance, now I want to get into some of the more conspiracy theory, I'd say, side of what people are worried about with smart meters. And I think part of this discussion will be about what things smart meters can or can't do in some ways. And one of the things I've heard people say is, oh, if you let them put one of those things on your house, they're going to be able to turn your air conditioning thermostat down, you know, off, you know, if you're using too much power, you know, if you're keeping your house too cold or if you're keeping your house too warm in the winter, they're going to be able to change your heat, your air conditioning or, you know, and is that something that can be done with a smart meter?
Well, it would have to be voluntary, and you would have to actually have the devices within your home to allow that to happen. So, in other words, you know, we did a pilot program even in the absence of any kind of smart meters, where we were testing kind of customers' willingness to have you know, their water heaters shut off during certain times of the year when power was, you know, when there was a lot of demand for power. But, you know, that was totally a voluntary program, and we basically mounted a device on the customer's water heater, and the customer agreed to do this, and they agreed to get, you know, we would pay them a little bit of an incentive if we were able to regulate the power going to the water heater during certain times of the day when particularly when power prices are really, really high, where we might have to go out and buy power on the market and at really high prices. In some ways there are devices out there that can regulate your be regulated remotely. I mean, right now you have the Nest thermostat, which is a company that's owned by Google, and you can regulate your heat up and down using your smartphone. So there's technology out there right now that allows customers to do that. Again, all of it's voluntary.
It's not eWeb actually moving those customers' thermostats up and down, and a smart meter doesn't make you able to do that automatically without the customer allowing a bunch of extra stuff installed in their house and then somehow or another being able to connect it. And it probably wouldn't be connected to the smart meter, be probably connected through the internet.
Well, yeah, or either way. So it could be, our strategy is, you know, if we ever want to have a program like that, it would be voluntary. The customer would have to agree to do it. That's not what we do as a utility. We don't mandate stuff like that for customers. But as technology improves, there probably will be more and more appliances and other things in, you know, available to customers to allow the customer to be able to do that or to sign up for a program that might say, wow, in exchange for the utility perhaps shutting off my water heater for an hour during the time when demand in the Pacific Northwest is the highest, I'll get a little rebate from that, and you know, it'll be beneficial to me to do that. So you know, it's partially correct that, yeah, you know, there is technology that would allow a utility to do that. So that is partially correct. Whether a utility would do that unilaterally, I don't know of a utility that's done that, but you know, it is possible to do that.
Yeah, but the smart meter enables that, but it takes something being installed in your home on your appliance.
What would be called a smart appliance, you know, which there's not many of those out there, but I think eventually you might have a water heater that has that device built into the water heater already, rather than having to hook something to the water heater.
Yeah, but then that device has to be set up to communicate with the smart meter, which still takes somebody turning that feature on inside your home.
Correct.
Yeah. My, you know, kind of what I wanted to bring up there is, you know, a smart meter may enable that service to be available to somebody, but you have to physically let somebody in your house and set it up to be done that way. It's not something that utility can do without asking you.
Or the customer may be able to set that up themselves.
It's still something that happens inside your home that you have complete control over. Just because this box is on the outside of your house doesn't mean that the utility has access to be able to turn your thermostat up and down or shut your water heater off for periods of time.
Correct. Like at my home, if I had an advanced meter right now, the meter wouldn't be able to differentiate whether my water heater's on or my dishwasher's on.
Right. Because there's nothing that's communicating through to tell them what appliance is on, because the smart meter sees is there's power going through the meter. Doesn't know where it's going to. Yeah, that's one of the major things I hear is that, you know, they're going to be able to, you know, and it's all part of this UN Agenda 21 thing, and I don't quite get how that's a connection to Agenda 21, but maybe you understand that better than I do.
I really don't. You know, I would just say, well, you know, we've got the power to shut. We've got the ability to shut people's power off right now. We could just go door to door and shut the power off at the meter.
Yeah.
So we could do that now. There's no reason to do it. You know, it doesn't make sense to do it. So I don't know.
Yep. So one of the other concerns is this time of day pricing that it becomes mandatory versus a voluntary sort of thing. Is that something that, you know, maybe 10 years in the future does happen, that the issue of the evening power spike that we get every day is becoming problematic for the electric utilities, so they try and make that a more expensive time of day to use power, and maybe at noontime when it's not quite so high of a demand, a less expensive?
Well, I think some of that reality is already here. I mean, I think there are some states either contemplating requiring all utilities to do time of day or time of use pricing. I think, I'm trying to remember, I think California might be one of them. We don't anticipate having any kind of mandatory time of use pricing. Again, our philosophy with this whole modernization program is to provide customers with choice, and so customers might decide it's a good deal for them. We currently have a pilot program going where we have customers on time of use pricing, and you know, just to test how much they like it, you know, and whether they can save money, how convenient is it for them. Part of that pilot is we have what we call a best rate guarantee, where at the end of the 1 year pilot, if they haven't saved any money on the pilot, we'll actually refund them the difference between what they would have had, what their power bill would have been just on the regular rate. So yeah, it's, you know, it's out there, you know, you know, people talk about it as a threat. We actually see time of use pricing, particularly voluntary time of use pricing, as an advantage for some customers. Again, it's not for everybody. And we know there are customers out there that would not benefit from time of use pricing. And so we want to make it an option, not something that's mandatory.
Well, that's good. So go a little bit off topic here for a minute.
Okay.
You mentioned carbon footprint earlier with the gas savings from not having to run meter trucks all over the town. And in the news recently has been this whole issue of pulling dams out of the Klamath River. And, you know, I know EWEB has several hydroelectric dams, and hydroelectric's a huge amount of the power that is generated in the Pacific Northwest. What do you see for the future of EWEB, and particularly with this the new power bill that just passed in the short session here? Is EWEB going to have to be making additional investments in what's considered to be green or low carbon power? And you know, what's the future of EWEB's hydroelectric dams? Are they going to be torn out? We're going to see a quote free Mackenzie River 30 years from now?
Well, yeah, those are great. Great topics. You know, I think you could do a whole show on that. I'd love to come back and do that, really. No, seriously, but kind of briefly, you know, we're like a lot of other public utilities in the Northwest that get most of our power from Bonneville. And, you know, we also, as you mentioned, we have our own hydro and we have some wind. We're already, you know, 90% green. In other words, 90% of our power is already coming from sources that don't emit fossil fuels. And it could be higher. It kind of depends on how you calculate all that. But, you know, we're pretty green already. We've already met all of the renewable standards that were set by the state of Oregon. And so we don't see any need to acquire any new power resources for probably 20 or 30 years at least. You know, our problem is we actually have too much power. We've kind of oversubscribed on some of our power, and we're part of the issue is with Oregon at some point, you know, essentially mandating that there be no coal sold or transported into Oregon in terms of power, at least power generated from coal. Those utilities that are under that, the Pacific Core and Portland General, are going to have to replace that coal power that they currently use. So, you know, Portland and Pacific Core are like 40-60% coal based, and EWEB and a lot of other the public utilities that get power from Bonneville are like 90% non-coal. And so we're in a good position, but kind of the hidden downside of that legislation is those big utilities up in Portland and PacifiCorp are kind of not going to be able to replace that coal power with hydro, because they have to meet the new 50% renewable standard. And so we call hydro renewable, but by the state of Oregon standards, it's not considered renewable. So we've got excess power, but we might not be able to sell it to those utilities that have to replace that coal power. So there might be a little bit of an imbalance in the surplus power situation in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I've sat down with the folks from Lane Electric and looked at what they call the duck grass. I think you're probably familiar with that. It came out of California, that kind of shows when people use power versus when power is available. And there's a big difference in the middle of the day when a lot of renewable power is available and there's not a lot of consumption. And that kind of brings us back around to the smart meters and being able to charge by time of day and maybe get people to move some of their consumption into when, say, solar is actually generating it around noontime, but there's not a whole lot of usage. Whereas the one thing great about coal and hydro is it's spinnable power. Maybe you can tell people briefly about the difference between power that you can spin up and ramp up as demand goes, or power that you can't really depend on when it's going to be on or off, or that has to just be set steady and can't be ramped up quickly, and how that's, you know, one's a lot more valuable to a utility in some ways than the other, and most of the renewables don't tend to be in the what I refer to as spinnable power. I don't know if that's the correct term.
Yeah, it's more like intermittent and sort of firm, what we call firm power, where it's power that's available almost 24/7 if you need it. And, you know, we've got a couple of charts and graphs here at EWEB where it shows like a four-day period in December of, I think it was 2012 or something, when we had this huge cold snap in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, yeah.
And because most people still heat with electricity, power demand just went through the roof. And the graph is superimposed with the output of wind farms in the Pacific Northwest, and it was zero. So at a time when we had massive demand for power due to the cold snap, there was virtually no wind power being generated because there was no wind. So
yeah, so
it was a total disconnect from the ability to use this, you know, great source, renewable source of power, which is wind, but we were unable to use it to meet a period where we had extremely high demand.
Yeah, I remember that cold snap. I lost a lot of bushes that probably I was a little bit pushing the limits of what zone they should be in, but I lost a lot of California lilac and Mexican orange during that cold snap. As I remember, it was also pretty foggy during that cold snap, so I doubt the solar panels were generating a lot either during that period.
I don't remember. I mean, it might have been sunny at that time, but, you know, and that, you know, and I think, you know, as if battery technology ever comes around, that'll be a game changer. People will be able to store that solar energy and wind power, so that, you know, that would be essentially a game changer if Elon Musk or some of these other folks develop in-home battery technology that's inexpensive and allows a customer to, you know, the end user to store energy and electricity for future use. That, you know, that could partially solve that problem that you raised.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it won't be the exploding lithium batteries. well, you know, we covered a lot of ground, Lance. We got about 5 minutes or so left in the show here. Is there something I left out about smart meters you want folks to know about?
No, I just maybe want to, you know, this is smart meters for us is part of a bigger, what we call modernization effort. I mean, it's one component. It's an important component, but you know, we've set out as a utility to try to meet the, you know, the changing, you know, interests and demands of our customers who are, you know, a lot more sophisticated and are more tech savvy. And, we've got a strategy of over the next 10 to 15 years, we're essentially replacing not just our metering system, but a lot of other technology that we have to be able to connect more with our customers and to, again, provide more ability to have two-way communication and do a lot of things, whether it's you know, just changing our – updating our website or – developing a, you know, a bill payment app for our customers or what have you. And the advanced meters and AKA smart meters is one big component of that, but it's just part of an overall effort. And again, it's, we've recognized that it's all about customer choice. And I think our strategy with the opt-in is a demonstration of that.
Yeah, I think over time, as you know, other utilities have smart meters in, and there gets to be more and more data about the, you know, public health safety of them, I think people will gain acceptance, and particularly when they see that people aren't getting their heat turned down from some nefarious central control center.
Right, and I guess, you know, ultimately, we're giving that choice to the customer. I mean, if a customer is concerned about security or, you know, health or anything, they have the choice. They are not being forced to do anything. And in fact, they don't have to do anything. They don't even have to call us to say, you know, I don't want that. And so, you know, that's our response to the ability to let customers make those choices rather than have the utility make the choice and then the customer have to do something to opt out.
Yeah, I think at least Eugene Water Electric is kind of ahead of some of the other utilities in offering that, you know, where it's an opt-in system, which, you know, basically, you're doing what the free market does, which is let people make choice and weigh the values of different things and make a choice of where they want to, you know.
And we'll find out. I mean, if customers don't want these services, if they don't see value in them, then you know, our adoption rate is going to be low. If they see value and they see that there's benefit to having these services, then we're going to be successful.
Well, I know I see benefit when I get that warning from my Verizon folks that I'm up to 75% of my data. And I definitely see benefit when I go to the movie theaters at 10 o'clock on a Sunday so I can pay for the matinee costs. So time of day pricing's been around for a long time. Lance, I just want to really thank you for coming on today. It's been pretty educational, and I hope that we've dispelled some of the myths around advanced meters, and I really appreciate you making the time for the Bose Knows Show tonight.
You bet, Jay. It's been great. I really appreciate the opportunity.
All right, thanks. And that's going to be a wrap for the Bose Knows Show for this evening, and we will talk to you next week, and I haven't really nailed down a guest. It may be a free-for-all show. Who knows? Maybe we can continue this conversation or move on to others. But we'll talk to you later. Good night from downtown Elmira.
Are you there, Jay?